Okay. So this week we're going back into like SQL stuff, and we're going to learn how to create and alter like the schema and the tables and stuff like that. So a bit more practical again. Before I start, any questions about stuff? Previous lectures, current stuff, anything? No. I'll just start then. So this is the continuation of the stuff we've talked about until now. You end up with a you do all the steps, right? You create a diagram, or you get the requirements, you create a diagram, you end up with a model, and now it's time to translate that into a database. So for that, again, we use like SQL, and we write some commands, and bada bing, bada boom, the tables show up, and then your database is up and running, and then you can add data and do all this stuff to it. So, like a lot of this stuff, you can argue of like, oh, I don't really need to know any of this. If I go into like PHP my admin or whatever, I can just create tables by just like right clicking and like filling out some stuff, and then the table is created. So why should I learn this? And like you'd be right? Like not that many people are creating the databases just by having scripts, or like by writing the scripts themselves. There are tools that create like all these commands for you. So you'll just tell like some script to be like, hey, create me like all these tables, and then it'll write like a huge SQL file by itself. If you need to do stuff, you usually just use like some SQL UI thing that again, you just use the mouse to do all these things, but it's useful to understand how to do it yourself. Like, say if there's some problems with the script that creates the SQL file that creates all the tables, then you should be able to go and debug it and figure out like what's wrong there. And also just so you give a good impression to whoever employs you. It's kind of the same with Git. If you like know how to use whatever Git UI, that's fine. But if suddenly somebody's like, oh yeah, just do it in the console, and then you don't know how to like even commit stuff using the console, then that's kind of gives a bit of a bad impression. So, to create a table, you just do this. So you have a command, create table, then the table name, and then a bunch of columns and their data types. So here we're creating a table, persons, and then we define like all the columns that are going to be in that table and their respective types. So it's pretty straightforward. Most of the UI, like the graphical interfaces for like database management, they'll show you the command that they're running when you're doing stuff manually, or like using the mouse. So that's also a good way to like figure out what is being done. So for example, here in table plus, if I do database selected, okay. Wait a second. I'll just take one of these. Then if I'm creating a table, this will show up. and like just create some random thing, and you hit submit. It'll show up like down here that I've created a table, lead code, blah, 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 and then all the stuff that was used to create a table. So that's useful if you want to like see what the right way of doing it is. You can usually create a table using the mouse and whatever graphical interface you're using, and then you can just go and copy the command. I maybe shouldn't say that, because then you'll just do the exercises like that instead. Shit. I forget what I said. No, it's a good shortcut to do this type of stuff. So this is creating a table. It's pretty straightforward. So each column needs to have a name and a data type, and then the data types are any of these. Like there's different types of data types. Like the main types are texts, numbers, and dates. And these kind of vary from SQL implementation to SQL implementation. So they might like be named slightly different, but then if you don't know, like the database first, when you're trying to create a table, it'll probably complain like, oh, this data type doesn't exist. And then you're like, oh shit, how do I insert or create a table that's a string in Postgres or something? And then you just go and search online, and it's like, oh, you know, it's this data type instead of whatever else I used in MySQL. Chars, varchars. These define like a set number of characters. So char is exactly that amount of characters. If it's a varchar, it can be up to that number of characters. And then tiny text and further along is just bigger and bigger stuff that you can put into that column. Usually, ideally, you just use whatever the smallest thing you can predict is going to be there. 255 characters is more than good enough for a lot of stuff. So like if you're saving a name, or like first name, last name, whatever, it probably won't have like more than 255 characters. You could just be that person that is just like, oh, I'll just use text for everything, or I'll just use a blob for everything. But that's using a bit too much space, so be conscious about how much space you're allocating for your strings. And then the same for numbers. You have like different types of numbers with different types of ranges. This is like most normal programming languages like C and all that stuff instead of JavaScript or just a number. So you have like tiny int that ranges from minus 128 to 127, and then all the way up to big int, which is like a huge ass, like impossible to comprehend number. And then you have the floating point fields. So if you're using it for, you know, storing a price, you'll probably want to use like a float or a double. But if you're using, or if you want to store, say, like age for some reason, then it should probably be an int. And then some different types of data types for dates. You have date and date time that also has time, and then timestamp and blah, blah, blah. So by default, columns allow for null to be inputted into it. So if you don't say anything, it'll just allow for null. So then you need to specify that it should not be null if that is the case. An example of that is there I'm defining a column, it's called quantity, has int size 11 of as a data type, and then I specify that it should not be null, so every value in that column should be defined, and then I also set it as a default, so default null one means whenever I introduce a row into the table that doesn't have a quantity defined, it'll just become one by default, right? So I don't need to specify it in my insert query. I can just leave it empty, but it's going to be populated by one. For columns that allow null, if you don't specify anything, then the default is going to be null. Then we have auto increment. One column per table can be defined as an auto increment table. This is usually the primary key. It only contains positive numbers, and the way auto increment works is every time you insert something, the counter is going to go up, and that number is going to be like whatever was the last number plus one. That means if we insert a bunch of values and then we remove some in between, right? Like I insert like 10 values and then I remove number 7. 7 is not going to appear ever again. It's going to keep on going. So I could remove the first 10 and the next thing that I insert is still going to be 11. Doesn't matter. This is to avoid any sort of problems when it comes to reusing IDs, right? It'd be a bit of a hassle if when somebody died, whoever like was born next could use their like personal number, right? Then suddenly all the banks are like, oh, yeah, this 2-year-old has a bunch of debt. You know, like it's the same for databases like this. So to avoid these type of problems, we just increment. So here's a bunch of tables, and then here's an example. This is kind of skipping ahead. Okay, whatever. So in this query, what we're doing is creating a table. If not exists, this is a clause that can be used to avoid the query breaking if there's already a table. So say we want to run the same script over again just to make sure everything is okay. Or say like we create a huge like SQL file where we create all the tables that we want for the database. And then for some reason we want to change or add another table. We could create another file and then it'd be like a bit of a hassle, or we could just add it to the same file of like the new table, adding it to the current SQL file, and then we can just run the same one again. And that means that you'll try and create all the tables, you'll check, okay, this one already exists, this one already exists, this one already exists, and then it'll reach one that does not exist, and then it will just run that query and add a table, as opposed to just adding all of them again. Right? Does that make sense? I can show you an example of a. So the way this is. Prisma migrations. So here's an example of So there's some external tools to like generate all this. I don't think we'll talk about this stuff in the context of this subject. People from your back-end development courses or whatever will probably mention some of this stuff to you. But here's like a SQL file that can be used to like create a database. So you can see you have a bunch of create table queries. And what this will do is we'll, if I'm putting this in some sort of database interface or whatever, this will just run all the scripts or run all the commands and create all the tables. This is useful, say, for example, if you want to copy or if you want to create the database again, if you want to create another instance of the database, then you can just take this, and it's like super easy to recreate. You'll just run the script, run all the commands, and then you have like a database with the exact same structure of the previous database you had, and you're ready to go. That's enough. So to creating a table, you can also create a table from an existing table. So you can use a select statement after the creation to copy all the stuff and definitions and whatnot into a new table using that notation. And then, so that's for creation. Any questions about that? No? Then we have some more commands. We have drop table. Drop table will remove a table from your database. If you remove a table from your database, it's gone forever. Unless you have backups, then you need to reset the backup and blah, blah, blah. This is just like, it's a one-way street. If you drop a table, it's gone. If you ever see drop table, that's usually or the concept of SQL injection. A lot of times takes or abuses the drop table command to screw stuff up. So here's an example. Let me see if I can open. So if this it will be something that your backend classes, whatever, will probably approach at some point, which is when you're making queries to the database from a server, you always need to sanitize whatever queries are being done, because if you just allow the user to write whatever, stuff like this can happen. So what this will do is it will pretend to insert something, so like complete the record, right? And then there's a semicolon here, and then it will run another command. And what this says is drop database table something. or table license plate. Yeah. So what this would do is it would run the command. It'd be like, okay, something was inserted, and then it would run the next command, and then it would drop the whole table. You kind of need to be a bit lucky to get exactly the table that you need and the exact number of parameters. But this is something that can be very real, and I've seen people like do this type of stuff. So yeah, this is one of the commands you have to be like a bit more careful about, because we'll screw up your database easily. Drop table. If there are any foreign keys associated with that table, then it will fail. You can force the table to be dropped if you type cascade afterwards. But the problem with that is then everything that has a foreign key that depends on the table department is going to also be dropped. So if there's a big possibility there that you like wipe out half of your tables in your database if you just use cascade in the wrong spot. So yeah, but the dropping tables in general isn't that common, so you probably won't run into it, but be careful. And then truncating the table. This command, what it does is basically takes all the data that it's in the table and then just deletes all of it. So all the data that is stored in that table is gone. The table is reset to just having nothing inside of it, which is useful, for example, for testing. You just want like a clean database every time you start doing stuff, for example. And then altering a table after you've created it. Sometimes you need to add some more columns, you need to change the column types, you need to add some more constraints or whatever. That's where alter table comes into. You run alter table and then the table name. Then you add whatever columns you need. Or you can drop whatever columns you need. Or you can modify them. So this will, like the table still exists, and all the data that is in the table still exists. So a lot of times you might run into the situation where you run these commands and they fail, and that's usually because whatever data is in the table doesn't conform with the new definition of the table, right? If we suddenly add a date of birth column to the table persons, and then none of the data that's already in the table has a date of birth, right? And we specify that that column should not be null, then all the data that is in the table is not valid anymore, right? Because they will have a null date of birth, right? So it's common enough that these commands will fail if you don't do, or if you don't take that into account. So the normal approach is, if you want to add a new column, you set it that it can be null. Then you go into the data and change all the data so every row has a date of birth. And then you alter the table again and set that the column cannot be null. And then all the data is already not null, so then that command is going to be successfully completed. And then you have a table with the date of birth field not allowing null, right? But it needs to be like a three-step thing. Or you can set default for something. Yeah, modifying a column and then dropping a column. So, yeah, again, same stuff. There we're just adding a new column, altering the table to add a new column, and then we're dropping that column from the table. Can also rename a table, either using alter table or just the rename command immediately, and then add that, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then we also have the concept of views. Views are kind of like tables, but not exactly. Table is like an actual defined thing that has data in it. It has a structure, has all these things. A view is just kind of like a derived or a virtual table that doesn't actually exist. It's just a new way of visualizing the data that is in the database. What's the point of this, of like just creating virtual tables? For one, we can create different ways of viewing the data. If we have a table that has some confidential information and we have some different users with different access levels, we can define multiple views. So people that have access, like the basic access, only see the basic information, and people that have more access can see both the basic information and confidential information. We can also like customize the way the data is displayed for different users. An admin usually needs like to see a lot more stuff than somebody else, like just a basic user. So then we can create different views that allow them to see the data in different ways. And also, if they can simplify joins and other operations, because what the view basically is just a stored select statement. So when we're creating a view, or we give it a name, and then there's always a select statement that is associated with that specific view. So here we're creating a view for all the employees in department 80, and then if we're just like selecting everything from MPView 80, we just basically are getting whatever that select statement of the view is doing, which, as you can imagine, is useful because then you don't need to repeat these queries all the time. It can just be stored in the database, like, oh, here's a specific way of looking at the data, of like, oh, here's all the employees from Department 80, and then you can just use that for joins and selects and stuff like that, and you don't really need to worry about making the same request again and again. And then you can also rename columns and do a bunch of stuff, and then it will just be stored in the database as opposed to just being something that you do over and over again. So then if I'm doing a query of selecting everything from Salvo 50, what that does is it'll run this select statement, and then it'll just get you everything. But then it's basically just a shortcut, right? This is very useful if you already have like specific use cases of like, oh, I'm totally going to need to see everybody with salary on the salaries of everybody from Department 50. Then you can just create a view, and that's like, that'll be forever in your database. You don't need to worry about it. So when you do a select like this, it's kind of like doing a subquery, but you don't need to worry about the subquerying part. It's, you're selecting everything from MPU80, but what this part is doing is basically doing this select and then returning everything. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Cool.
This gets especially interesting when you start having like super complex views. So here you can have a view that has like a bunch of different selects and some parameters and stuff like that. So now when we run the department sum view, what we're doing is basically running that complex query of getting like the minimum, maximum salary and the average of all these people grouped by department. Then we just need to do like select this from this view, and then that's it. Then you can ask, well, why don't we just like create a different table instead of having a view? Well, because then we just have duplicate data, right? And that's not really like that good. So this way, the data is stored in one place. It's the table of employees and departments. It's stored there. And then we just store a select statement that will do that select statement every time. And that will also always be relative to the data that is stored in those tables. So again, like views are basically stored select statements, which means there's no like data going back and forth between the tables and the views or whatever. That's not happening. What is happening is the select statement is being run every time you're making a query to that specific view, which means if you're updating a table, doing some changes to the data in any of the tables that the view is dependent on, those changes are going to be reflected immediately on the view, right? You do an update on the table, then you query the view is updated. Why? Because it's running the select statement, and the select statement is being done on the updated data. Yeah? Okay. So if since the data in a view are basically reflections of the data that's underneath, right? You can do some operations on the data itself, but it needs to be stuff that uniquely identifies the row. So like if it's a view that just selects a few columns from a table, every identifier of each of the rows is still going to be present. So you can do like deletes and modifies and stuff. If you then have like groups of stuff or distincts or anything else, then one row in the origin will maybe correspond to multiple rows, or multiple rows in like the origin of the query are going to result in only one row. And then like we can, if we're deleting like a grouped row of like this is a grouping of all these different rows, then that would mean it would like delete all of the rows in the origin. So instead it just makes it simple. Like if we have like a one-to-one mapping between the view and the table that it relates to, then you can do operations. If not, you can't. Yeah. And then when dropping a view, you know, just do drop view and the view. Then it gets dropped. So some advantages like data independence and security and reduce complexity and convenience and blah, blah, blah. So you can have multiple views for multiple permissions. That means different users can see different things, and it's just convenient because you don't have to write the query every time. You can just store it, and it can just be used infinitely amounts of times. And then some disadvantages could be like performance and updating restrictions and structure restrictions and stuff like that. Performance-wise, like you're still doing a query or you're still doing like a select. It's not like you, like that data is stored already like neatly in the table and then you can just go and retrieve it. That still needs to be calculated. And if the view is like a ultra complex, super huge like select statement, then that is still going to run every time you're doing a select or you're selecting from that specific view, which, yeah, is not the best. So here's some practice stuff. The slides are up in Blackboard, so I'll just have this on the screen and then just run the queries on the thing. How's the size of the thing? Kind of small. Settings, preferences, and font and colors, and let's do like fucking 50, and 50, and 50, yeah, neat. Should be big enough. So first of all, I can just drop table product, so I have like a clean thing. And if you refresh these things, So again, like you can run the query like this, right? Drop table, whatever. It's also useful if you're just doing multiple at a time, I guess. Or you could just come here and then delete. Then save. And then you can see that, I can't really see it that well, but the command that was executed that you can see down here, because the database graphical interface that still needs to communicate with the database it's relating to somehow, right? So it's doing the exact same queries as you would if you're like typing, like if you're selecting stuff from table, writing in SQL, right? The graphical interface is doing exactly that when you're clicking on a table and then seeing all the content of that table, right? So to create a department with data type int name varchar, so creating a department create table. And then you would do and then it was int 7. Again, this is in the slides for today's lecture. This is exercise 1. And then name, and then the type, which is varchar. Varchar. Okay. There's an error, blah, blah. What was the error? Probably some stupid stuff. Drop table, create table. Create table. Oh yeah, it was the missing comma. Yeah. So basic syntax for creating a table is this. Create the table and then the name of the table. Oh, fuck me. Well, it's parentheses. All the actions are like super slow on this monitor for some reason. Okay, there we go. So, So creating a department with a department ID of int length 7 and then varchar length 25. And yeah, and then if you go and select the table itself, you should see that it has two columns. And if you're inspecting the structure, you can see that it has int for department ID and then name for varchar. And also, both of them are nullable. Modify the employee table to allow for longer employee last names. Confirm your modification. Oh, no, I skipped an exercise. Create a new table, new departments, and take the data from departments table, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I'll do this exercise after the break. I think that's better. Yeah. 1:15. Where's the there? Reminder again, if you want to complain to the complaint people. because well, if there's no complaints, I guess we'll just say we had the meeting and not really have the meeting, I guess. But if there are any complaints, just go ahead and do them. I swear my feelings won't be offended if there are some. What else? Next, as another reminder, I'll remind you again tomorrow, and I'll post an announcement on Blackboard. But next week I'm not here, so there's no lectures. There will still be labs and stuff, and I'll leave you some stuff some optional stuff for you to do that you can decide if you want to do or not. Because I know you have assignments and other stuff, so it's up to you. My initial plan would be to, I'll publish the lecture slides for the week after, so you can start looking ahead, because I won't go through all the XML stuff in detail, super much detail, because it's boring. I'm still gonna give it. We're not skipping any stuff, but you can start reading ahead a bit. But the slides that I got from last year was 120 XML slides or something. I'm not doing that. No, thank you. I don't think we need to go into that much detail. I'll still give enough detail so you can do the assignments and so you have a base understanding of what's going on, but I think it's a bit excessive. So then I'll just leave you the option of going through that stuff yourself next week. And also I'll give you the option of creating databases for yourselves. I'm sure at least a couple of you will want to do some personal projects and stuff, and it's nice to incentivize you doing that in school time as opposed to having to do it in your own free time after you're already tired from doing all this computer stuff at school. So if you want to create your own databases for your personal projects, whatnot, or for projects of other assignments and stuff, you can do that next week too, and then you can come to me. Or, no, I'm not going to put that on the TAs. You can come to me, and then I can review the databases you've created, and I can give you feedback of, is this good or is this not, blah, blah, blah. And then you get some more practice of, creating tables and all that stuff as well. So I think that's the plan. Any objections? Any other stuff you want to do? Yeah. Yeah, well, and depending on who shows up to class tomorrow, if it's the normal people that always show up, then I won't repeat this information again. But if there's some new people, again, I'll repeat it tomorrow too. Does that sound good? Or I can also just be you don't have to do anything next week if people are objected into making themselves feel bad about not doing anything. I guess I'll do that then. And then because the last few weeks, after this week, we're mostly just talking about XML and then NoSQL databases. So all this relational database stuff is done. So keep on keeping on. Exercise 2 is create a table, new departments, and take the data from the departments table. Include only columns that you need. Okay, for this, I'll show you something else too. which is, you've started doing some database stuff, related stuff in your backend course, right? Sorry for excluding you guys, but you have, right? I'm guessing you created a table, just like right-clicking and then creating table, blah, 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 right? Have you added any data to your databases? How did you do it? By hand? It's like, oh, you know, yeah? Okay. By text input. Yeah, but if you, a very useful thing when you want to test or to have like a bunch of data in your database instead of going through your website and then putting everything at like one at a time, because then you end up with like, you know, you're probably going to get bored after the first like 10 entries and you're like, ah, this is enough. The problem is, what if you want to test how your database and how your application behaves if you have a million rows, right? That's not really doable if you're going to just like be inputting that data by hand. So a useful thing to take care of that stuff is any mocked data generator. The one I use the most is this one. It's called Mockeroo. It generates data automatically, so you can decide what type of data you want. You fill in the fields and the type of data you want in that field, and then you can just create like, you know, 1,000 rows of stuff. So here for department, it was department ID and name, I think. So department ID, which is here a row number, it's just going to be like 1, 2, 3, and then a name was something. If in Mockeroo you have like a bunch of different stuff, so you can test like different, so you, like the input data is actually somewhat believable as opposed to just being like gibberish. So you can have like, for example, like card makes, and it's like on the Ford Pontiac, whatever. You can have like buzzwords, years, company names, whatever. So I think there's one for department here. Department, corporate, sure. And then say I want to create like 20 rows. Can select the format, SQL, and the table name, which is it department, or was it just dep? Then you can come here and preview, and this is what it'll give you. So a bunch of insert queries, and then it's just a bunch of different like department names. So I don't need to go manually and like imagine what type of like department names I want to give it. I can just come here and just generate me some data. So and then downloading the data. This will give you a nice little download. This will give you a nice little SQL file that you can just bring into whatever you want, like this. And then you can just run. It's dep. Replace with all if you just run all, then department ID. Shit. Oh, I missed. Oh, misspelled it. Fuck me. Okay. The okay, so 20 queries that were okay, and then if you go to data, then you have. Yeah, that's bad. Okay. Fuck me. So, what's the point of having an expensive ass computer when it's the performance is like this on secondary monitor? Yeah. So, a bunch of rows were created, and. Yeah, so I did 20. I could have done like 1,000. It's very easy to just like populate the whole database by just creating mock data like this. And then the thing that was asked in the exercise was copy. Yeah. So create. Table, new departments, new departments, and then the everything from yeah, so that will create a new table, and then you can see that here is new departments, and then all the data is the same and all the columns are the same. So this is very useful. Say for example you're going to like royally screw up a table, you're doing some changes to the table, or you're just like are afraid of messing up, then you just create a table. You can call it like department backup, for example, and then you know all the data and all the structure of the table you're about to screw up is still there. It will still like live as another table. And then if you have, or if you actually screw up, then you can just delete the bad table and then rename the backup table, and then you know, nothing ever happened. It's okay. So then we have create an employee table with employee ID, last name, first name, department ID. Confirm that the table is created. Seem kind of basic. Yeah, I'll just it's taking too long to write these queries. I'm getting annoyed. So for this exercise, you just create table impl and then parentheses, and then define employee ID and in 7, and then last name and varchar, and then first name and varchar, and then department ID and int, right? And then for exercise 4, when you need to modify it, no, for longer employee last name, okay. Then you just define like alter table, then like set the column to like be a longer varchar. And then the last exercise was, yeah, so here you just create a table from and the select statement of the employee impl table, and then rename all the columns using aliases, and then you end up with the new table. And then dropping the table is just drop table, and then renaming it is just alter table rename, or just straight up rename. And then you and then just drop the column, which is alter table, drop column, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Good enough. Moving on. Cool. Next PowerPoint is about... including constraints in tables, bonus triggers. I'll probably not finish it today, but I can start now. Finish it tomorrow. Come on. Yes. Okay. Okay. So, constraints. So, constraints enforce rules at the table level. They prevent deletions, and if there's any like dependencies between tables, and they prevent stuff being inserted that is not valid, right? So if you define that a column should not allow for any null values, and if somebody tries to insert the null value, then it will complain, they will not insert the row, and it will keep all the data in the database valid. That's the whole point of constraints. It's to keep the data in the database always in a valid state. So these constraints can either be created when the table is created, or they can be created after the table is created by altering the table and adding these constraints, right? So these are constraints like primary keys, not nulls, foreign keys, uniques, all this stuff. So for not nulls, we've seen that already. We just defined that no value in this column can be null. So every time you try to insert something, if there's no value for that specific column, it is going to fail. If a table has already been created, if a table has already been created, you can add the not null constraint to the column with the alter table statement. But if there's any null values already in the table for any of the data, then it's going to fail. So then you need to go into the data, remove all the null values, make sure all of the rows have non-null values, and then you can alter it, because then whatever's in the data is going to match the definition of the table. And then primary keys, we just define a primary key after, either in the creation or in the altering process. After everything, you can just define like primary key, and then inside of the parentheses, whatever the field that should be where the primary key is. So here we define that the primary key should be the column user ID. And then for alternate keys, which are also like unique fields that uniquely identify a row, we can use unique instead. And that makes it so that if somebody tries to insert a row that has an email that already exists in some other row, that will also fail. The difference between the unique and the primary key is that the primary key is used to uniquely identify a row and is used for all these like foreign key constraints and all this other stuff, while unique just enforces there are no duplicates in this call, right? So only one primary key per table, and then they uniquely identify each row of that table. So you can see here, defining all the columns, name of the column, type of the column, not nulls, and then at the end, primary key, and one of the columns that we've defined. To alter a table, to make it have a primary key after we've created it. Again, you can't have multiple primary keys, so you can only run this command if there's already, if there's no primary key in the table. Here, we're altering the table and adding a primary key for username. If we want the primary key to be multiple columns, remember when we have like, for example, a N2M relationship where that involves having a intermediate table that maps the keys of both tables, then the primary key is the both foreign keys for the tables that they're referencing, right? And in that case, the primary key should be multiple columns. Then we can define something like this. This is a composite primary key. They'll take all the columns into account, and that means for each of the rows in the table, that pair or ternary of values should be unique, right? So here for table persons, each row is going to have like a different combination of first name, last name, date of birth, right? It's okay if people have the same first name. It's okay if people have like the first name, the same first name and same last name, but it's not okay for people to have both the same first name, last name, and date of birth. But again, this still means like you only have one primary key, right? But it's just a combination of those three values as opposed to just being one of the values. And again, to add a primary key after a table's been created, just do this. If you want to name your key, sometimes it's useful for reasons, organization, make it tidier, whatever. You can use the constraint keyword and then give it whatever name you want. Most database systems, if you omit that constraint person PK, you'll just give it a like decent name. It's not going to be like that bad. So you can still like figure out just by looking at the name of the key what it is. Add constraint, whatever. So again, and then it's the same thing for all the concepts. Alter the table and then drop the primary key. If you can see there, that's a use for naming a primary key or for naming any key in specific, which is we're altering the table and then dropping a constraint by name. So it can be useful, for example, for foreign keys. We can name, because we might have like 10 different foreign keys in the table, then we can drop one specific one by their like constraint name. So for unique, for unique, it's the same thing. It's the primary key. It's just unique instead. So defining unique columns like this, adding a unique column afterwards like this, and yeah, dropping, same thing. And then for references, for foreign keys. To define a foreign key, you need to first reference what the column in your table is going to be, that is going to be a foreign key for something else. Then reference some other table and the field that is referring to. And then we can define if what is the behavior on deletion and on update. So we have those different options for these behaviors: restricting, cascade, set null and default, which is basically how is stuff going to behave whenever like these actions occur. So foreign key, and then you see in the query here foreign key, and then the field that the foreign key refers to. This is in the table that we're currently creating or altering or whatever. And then references, and then the other table plus their like the specific field it's referencing. And yeah, remember you can't really have a foreign key for whenever you're inserting a value for a row for a foreign key. If the value doesn't exist in the other table, then it will fail, right? It can either be null or it can be a value that exists in the other table, not anything else. So say you have one table and it references another table, like some row in the other table, and then we delete this other row. What will happen? So by default, mostly what will happen is it will restrict, which means it will not allow you to delete this other row because there's something dependent on it, right? And that means then we would fail all these integrity checks and the data would not be valid, so we just prevent it from happening. Say, for example, we have employee table, 1, 2, 3, ID, and then department. Oh, fuck. And then we have the department table with an ID of 1, 2, 3. And then this person works in department 2, this one works in department 2, this one works in department 3. If we have restrict on deletion, that'll mean if we try to delete department 3, it'll check, like, is any other row depending on this using a foreign key? And this does. So it will not allow the deletion to go through because it's like, hey, hold up. Like, what do I do with this? This can't happen. Like, so you can't delete department 3 because there are people that are working in it. If we're doing cascade, then the deletion is going to go through. So department 3 is going to be removed. But everything else that also depends on that department 3 is also going to be removed. So then we're also removing employee 3. This is gone, because there, if we're deleting an department, say now we just remove the computer science department, then all the employees are like out in the street. We don't have a need for them anymore. If we're setting to null, that's the equivalent of, okay, the department is gone, but I'm keeping all the employees. They just don't have a department, right? So we just update their records to be like they don't have a department anymore. The department is just null, which can be okay if we allow for employees to not have a department, but if we don't, that's not really an option. And we can also set default. So say we're adding employees to the university, and by default they'll be employed in the main department or whatever. If we set the default for that specific column, then their value just gets updated to the default instead of to null or whatever. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, ish? Some? Cool. And it's the same with updates. So say we're updating department 3 to now have the ID of department 5. If we're cascading, then all the employees that are in department 3 now are going to be in department 5. And yada, yada, yada. Yeah, you get the deal. Yeah? Whatever. Foreign keys, creating a foreign key when creating the table. So this is how you create a foreign key. Constraint, foreign key, and then video, and then the name of the constraint. Then, yeah. Oh. Yeah, I don't, a key shouldn't really have that. It should just be one single. So constraint, foreign key, video, user profile, and then foreign key, and then the field that is a foreign key, which is username, which is this one, right? This is going to be a foreign key. And then this is going to reference some other table called user profile and the column username in that user profile table. Yeah? And again, they can be added after tables have been created. So just you don't need to add the constraint right away. But yeah, usually, if you know it's going to be a foreign key, just do it. It could be a situation where we're running the queries and the table doesn't exist yet, right? If you have like a huge script and you don't have the right order in the create tables, you can be creating a foreign key and then it'll be like, hey, hold up, you haven't defined PNO, the parts table yet. If that is the case, then you either switch the order which you're creating tables, so the parts table gets created before the O details table, or you just keep the same order, but at the end you add like this alter table just to make sure whenever this is running, the parts table is already defined. So creating a foreign key after the table has been created, yeah. And dropping a foreign key, so you can just reference it by the name of the key that you've given it or the name in the system, and you can usually just find out what keys exist by checking the database. And then on deleting and on updating, and then we, yeah. So what about other general constraints? So say, for example, we can't allow people under 21 to buy hard liquor, right? Or there can be less than 2 email addresses per person, or all these other requirements that are like more business requirements, but you can't really express them as simple, just like primary keys and uniques and stuff. That's when triggers comes in. So this is like a point of contention, and some people would argue like this type of logic doesn't belong in the database. It should be whatever backend is connecting to that database that should handle all this business logic. So if you know, you have a website, and a website is making an order to your server, the server would check if the order that's being done, and then it would check, okay, let me retrieve the user. Does this user have 19 years old? Okay, and then I won't make the request to the database. The problem there is, what if you have multiple APIs that are connecting to that database? Maybe some people don't know that, oh, I can't sell alcohol to people that are less than 21. If we want to, so like, how do you decide where this logic is going to go to? Like, usually the best approach, I think, is to just have these checks everywhere. So say you're making a website, and a user tries to make an order, your front-end React application should already like check somehow if you're allowed to make that order or not. Then you also need to have it in the server to have that check. Is this order valid or not before you make the request to the database? And then the database again should check, is the data that is being passed to me valid or not? This way, it will ensure that there's no orders that have been created by some malicious third party that is buying kids booze, you know? It's just very tidy. So how do you go about creating triggers? Or what are triggers? These are actions that get executed every time you do some sort of event. So for example, when rows are inserted or deleted or updated, or there's some statements running, and to create a trigger, you do this. So you give the trigger a name, and a time, and an event, and then you tell it what it should do and when it should do it. So we can create a trigger that happens before every insert. For each row that is being inserted, do something. In the trigger function, then we'll have both the old value and the new value. So here's an example. We create a table with people that have ages. And then before we insert anything into the people table, we're going to check, is the new age below 0? If yes, then set the new age to 0. And what this will do is it's going to check, okay, a row is being inserted. What is the age? The age is -5. Okay, then we're going to set the age to 0 because there's no ages that can be like negative numbers, right? Here's another example. So we can check to see we're creating a trigger called age check, and before it gets inserted into the alcohol customers table, for each of the row that we're inserting, check is the age under 21. If yes, then we call an error and be like, you're not allowed to do this. You can't insert this value. And again, here's orders. So we're inserting, we're creating a trigger that every time an order is being created, if the registration is made in the future, then you're jumping, or like then the order isn't valid because you can't like go into the future and make orders. So then we don't allow it to happen. Fuck. What is this? So here's a completed create query, and we can, like I showed you, just create a whole SQL file with a bunch of different create statements. You can store it all in a file, comment it to tell whoever's looking at your file what it should be and what all the tables are. And then you can just share that, so you can create a bunch of tables, and just that. That's also what, if you're going into whatever database management UI thing, and if you just hit export, it will just generate a huge ass SQL file that will back up all your data and all your columns and all the structure and that stuff. And then you can just take that, create a new database, run it, and your database is up and running again and has all the stuff that the other one did. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm done. 5 minutes left. I can do this later. I'll post the answers for these practice exercises later. Any questions or anything? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll just start with XML. Well, the original plan would be that I would stretch this into two classes or two lectures, but I guess I was too fast. Or he didn't ask enough questions, so then I just powered through it. So, yeah, I guess I'll just start with XML. There's also, like,